This is KGNU's Morning Magazine for Wednesday, July 20th of 2022. I'm your host, Hannah Stewart. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio. Coming up on today's program, a discussion about rising rent prices and a new bill passed to protect residents. A new exhibit at the Museum of Boulder tells the story of racial exclusion in Lafayette, specifically at its swimming pool. Disputes are brewing over water and oil at the Green River. And herbalist Brigitte Mars will bring us her regular Wednesday feature, Naturally. A BBC News update is at the bottom of the hour, then it's the Hightower Lowdown. On today's A Public Affair, Shannon Young will host a call-in show on media literacy with two guests. At 9:30, Uncle Jeff will be in the Boulder studio for the Morning Sound Alternative. That's all still ahead this morning, but first, a look at the headlines with KGNU's Nicole Rubin.
Black and Latino students in the Boulder Valley School District are more than three times as likely to be suspended as white students. That's according to a story by the Boulder Reporting Lab based on data provided by the school district. In 2020, Boulder Valley School District reformed its disciplinary policies and removed police from schools in an effort to avoid these disciplinary inequities. They trained educators to resolve conflict without punishment and streamlined rules across classrooms. Since the introduction of the reforms, fewer students have been suspended or referred to police, but the disparity between white students and students of color remains the same. According to data provided by Boulder Reporting Lab by the district, Latino students were about 3.5 times more likely to be suspended than white students during the 2021-22 school year. That figure reflects a disparity dating back more than a decade. While Latino students made up nearly 20% of Boulder Valley School District's 29,000 students, they accounted for about 44% of these suspensions. The data shows that Latino students are punished for the same behaviors as white students, such as fighting, threats of physical harm, disobedience, possession of tobacco, and marijuana. The school district started monthly meetings to create solutions. Cultural competency training may be included to aid in fixing the problem. Aurora City Council agreed last week to build 30 new pallet shelters for those experiencing homelessness. According to Sentinel, the decision comes after outreach workers report the city's newly enacted camping ban is not pushing unhoused people out of city limits, but shuffling them from one location to another. The new shelters will add 60 existing prefabricated shelters at Salvation Army-run sites at Restoration Christian Fellowship on East 6th Avenue and the Salvation Army Warehouse on Peoria Street. Pallet shelters offer short-term privacy and place to store belongings for homeless people in Aurora, and is a suitable option for those who cannot bed in congregate shelters. As the city places a ban on unauthorized camping, there has to be enough shelter space before sweeping. Prior to Monday's vote, council members showed support for building small shelters in May over expanding shelter at the Aurora Day Resource Center. Aurora City Council unanimously approved building the new shelters, but not without pushback. Councilmember Danielle Jurinski argued that the city should place multiple people into each 8x8 shelter, saying, "I'm a firm believer in beggars can't be choosers, and I mean, we're helping people get off the street." On Monday, wildlife protection advocates released the Colorado Wolf Restoration Plan. Lily Noble has more.
Advocates say the Wildlife Protection Plan is the first step in fulfilling Coloradans' 2020 vote to reintroduce gray wolf populations to the Rocky Mountains. The plan outlines 12 habitat blocks for wolf reintroduction, including Rocky Mountain National Park, which spans across the western slope. The habitat blocks were chosen based on availability of elk and other prey, while keeping distance from humans and domestic animals. Advocates hope the reintroduction of gray wolves will help ecosystems thrive by checking elk populations. Since the eradication of Colorado's wolves, which ended in 1945, elk populations grew to rates too high to work sustainably within the ecosystem, leading to what the report calls a slowly building ecological disaster and biodiversity loss. Wolves have had a tremendous impact on biodiversity and ecosystem health, said Johanna Hamburger of the Animal Welfare Institute's Terrestrial Wildlife Program. By reducing over-browsing by elk and deer, wolves improve the quality of riparian habitat, which benefits beavers, songbirds, amphibians, and fish. The plan lays out a path forward that would restore balance to the landscapes across the western slope. Also outlined are procedures for minimizing wolf attacks on livestock and compensation in the case that agricultural losses occur, and prohibits the killing of wolves preying on livestock on public land. For KGNU, I'm Lily Noble.
On Monday night, the Denver City Council voted 12-0 to approve Councilwoman Amanda P. Sandoval's rezoning to allow accessory dwelling units in the Regis neighborhood in North Denver. This is Sandoval's third neighborhood-wide rezoning and will allow 1,025 properties in District 1 to build ADUs. The U.S. Bureau of Land Management rounds up more horses despite protests. Christian Garibay has more.
The U.S. Bureau of Land Management, or BLM, issued a low-flying helicopter to begin rounding up and moving almost 750 wild horses on select rangeland in the western Colorado region. The process will begin on Friday, despite weeks of protests from wild horse advocates, national Mustang groups, and Governor Jared Polis. The BLM says high temperatures and drought make conditions unsustainable for the horses and the land across the East Douglas rangeland. The BLM will round up the horses and relocate them over the course of the next month to a holding facility in Utah. Governor Jared Polis, who vocally opposes the roundups, requested that the BLM allow a state veterinarian to be on site to ensure the horses' welfare. For KGNU, I'm Christian Garibay.
Xcel is charging consumers more than twice as much as they are paying independent homeowners for solar energy during peak summer hours. Kiara DeMare reports.
If you are a Colorado homeowner and have solar panels on your property, there's a chance that you are collecting extra solar energy and selling it to Xcel. More than 60,000 homeowners in Colorado have solar panels. Many of them have started to complain that Xcel, who is buying the reserve power for 8 cents, is shortchanging people. During peak summer hours, Xcel charges consumers up to 17 cents for power. Homeowners say if they're collecting more sun, they should be getting more of that profit. Xcel says they don't have the ability to share that profit because of a lack of smart meters, which tracks how much sun solar panels collect. The Colorado Solar and Storage Association officials say Xcel has known about this new primetime energy rate since 2016 and expressively studied solar customers as a subgroup in early trials. They said in the Colorado Sun, "There is no excuse for singling out this customer group and allowing such an extended delay." The Colorado Solar and Storage Association told the Colorado Sun, "Most solar owners will have to wait for full benefits until Xcel installs smart meters for all the 1.5 million electric customers it serves." Xcel told the Solar Association and regulators that most of the solar power users will not get their time-of-use smart meters until late 2023, pushing back the billing system yet again. For KGNU, I'm Kiara DeMari.
Expect a sunny morning and a cloudy afternoon across the Front Range today. In Boulder, it is a high of 92 and a low of 63. In Denver, it is a high of 93 and a low of 70. In Fort Collins, it is a high of 94 and a low of 63. Outside of the Boulder studio, it is 64 degrees. For KGNU, I'm Nicole Rubin.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. I'm your host, Hannah Stewart. Many families in the Denver metro area and around Colorado struggle to pay rent. Rising prices everywhere make housing costs worse than ever for low-income families. A bill passed this last session in the state legislature was supposed to create protections for residents of mobile homes, but it stopped short of capping rent hikes on lots. KGNU's Luis Licon has the story.
A small but energetic crowd of mobile home residents recently gathered on the west steps of the Colorado State Capitol to call for greater legal protections for renters. The 20-plus protesters waved hand-painted signs that read out, "Rest in peace, affordable housing," and "Polis loves profits over people." The legislators did pass some protections for mobile home residents this session, but many feel it did not go far enough. Maribel Rodriguez is a mobile park resident and lives in Arvada. She spoke at the event and told her story of how high rent prices have affected her and her family. I pay more than 50% of my income for rent. When I moved here for the first time 12 years ago, I paid $400, and today I pay more than $912. In the last 5 years, the rent has increased dramatically. For the past 2 years, we have had three different rent increases. House Bill 22-1287 was supposed to bring more protections for mobile home park residents, and most part of the bill did pass, but this spring, Colorado Governor Jared Polis threatened to veto the bill unless a key provision was stripped out. That provision would have prevented landlords from raising lot rent prices by more than 3% each year. The bill passed without the rent control measure. But speaking at the rally, Reverend Lydia Ferenc Roseberry with the Boulder Unitarian Church told demonstrators that Polis had a chance to act on his verbal support for affordable housing, but chose not to.
When tenants are not protected from excessive rent increases, those other protections lose their meaning. Because rent increases of 10, 20, and 30% force people to choose between food or medical care or shelter, and increase the chance of people losing their housing altogether.
KGNU contacted the governor's office to ask why he opposed the rent cap. The governor's office did not comment directly on stripping out the rent cap provision. However, a spokesperson pointed to other housing measures Governor Polis supported and has passed. For example, the governor supported a bill that allows mobile home park residents to band together to purchase their rented land and convert it into a resident-owned community. Some landlords across the Front Range criticized attempts to cap lot rent, arguing it would make park operations and maintenance more difficult amid rising costs.
Housing is a human right!
Many housing activists had hoped that passing rent cap for mobile home lots would have been the first step towards a repeal of a rent stabilization ban that the state legislature enacted back in 1981. The ban prevents local governments from adopting rent control measures tailored for local circumstances. Denver City Council President Pro Tem Jamie Torres attended a separate event at the Capitol building earlier this month to call on the legislature to repeal the ban.
So what's preventing us from having these local conversations is that it's actually not permitted per state law for us to control what rent looks like and any regulations around rent, whether at any level. So any policy conversations are held up because the state simply won't allow us to implement any controls on what rent looks like.
Recently, there was a bill that was passed in the legislature where Governor Polis threatened to veto a provision that would cap rent for mobile homes.
So that's an indication of how difficult this conversation is going to be, because that one was specific to mobile home parks, that you couldn't cap rent at 3% increases. That was removed because he wouldn't sign it if it went through with that provision. So it's an indication that this is not going to be a simple or easy conversation. But what it needs to be framed as is that what the state will allow us to do is not impose a specific policy, but begin to have our own discussion about what a policy could be in Denver if we were to adopt one. So it just allows us to open the door.
At both recent housing rallies at the state capitol, renters voiced anger and frustration about their rising living costs. They say it's past time for the state to step in and to enact measures that will permit them to stay in their homes and communities before double-digit rent hikes push them out. For KGNU, I am Luis Licon.
Lafayette Arts and Culture Resources Department will exhibit at the Museum of Boulder a historic moment back in the 1930s, a swimming pool built back in 1934 by Chicano Americans and Mexican immigrants. They were not allowed to enjoy it, but instead a sign outside said, "White Trade Only." KGNU's Rosanna Longo-Better spoke with historian and activist Frank Archuleta about the racism and discrimination featured in the exhibit that shows the research and the only photographs found of these historic moments.
The exhibit, Racism and discrimination at Lafayette's swimming pool shows the extensive research done with photographs. Frank Archuleta, historian and activist, reflects on the discriminatory policies which prohibit access to Latinos in 1934.
The pool wasn't access to the Latinos. And it started way before that, as far as when Mary Miller came into the Lafayette area here, she had a policies 100% American, all white, the temperance movement, and the Protestant movement. And this is what caused the acts of discrimination within the town. And it continued for many, many, many years, even after Mary Miller's death. And her family was all tied in with the Ku Klux Klan.
The exhibit highlights the efforts of a Latino woman called Rose Larraz, who fought for civil rights and justice and even put out a lawsuit against the city. The exhibit shows a lot of pictures, but none of the swimming pool. A picture of the swimming pool has vanished from history books.
Lafayette Faye Miller would ride the white horse up and down the streets parading over into the Louisville area, even against the Italianos over there. But the Mexican, Chicano, Latino people in this community, in the very beginning of the years, they didn't even live in the community. They were down in the southeastern part of the community in the coal mine camps and that. Well, Mary Miller then, the racism started. She wouldn't hire them at her mine. She wouldn't sell them any property and wouldn't give any bank loans. This is how the racism continued within the area of Lafayette for many, many years.
The museum will host a panel discussion to discuss the work underway to document a lot of this local history and will share steps in how to create more equitable and inclusive history.
It is not enough to be non-racist. We must be anti-racist. I ask you all, do not be blind to the reality of racism. Injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. It is time to dismantle structure racism and racist ideas. There is no room in America for racism of any color. It is time to end racial discrimination in America, and it is time to abolish all forms of racial discrimination.
That was historian and activist Frank Archuleta from Lafayette telling us about the exhibit at the Museum of Boulder that tells the story of discrimination at Lafayette's swimming pool. For KGNU, I am Rosanna Longobetter.
Make Them Hear You is taking a break this week. Instead, we bring you this water story from our partners at Rocky Mountain Community Radio. In Utah, a fight over water rights on the Green River, the chief tributary of the Colorado River, is brewing. Some years ago, conservationist group Grand Canyon Trust filed a lawsuit in a Utah federal district court challenging the Bureau of Land Management's approval of utility rights of way for Enefit American Oil. Those rights were for building pipelines and transmission lines. Grand Canyon Trust argued the construction violated the National Environmental Policy Act and threatened endangered species. But since that lawsuit, attorneys have discovered something else that seems fishy. Rocky Mountain Community Radio's Justin Higginbottom speaks with an attorney about the fate of a 10 million gallon per day water right impacting the Green River.
Enefit plans to build the nation's first commercial-scale oil shale mine and processing plant. It'll be in the Uinta Basin near the confluence of the Green and White Rivers. That's upriver from Moab. That kind of mining takes a lot of water, something like 4 barrels of water for every barrel of oil.
It's about 3.5 billion gallons of water per year. So really, that's a huge amount of water that Enefit needs to mine and process oil shale, and they're planning on getting all of that water from a single water right.
That's Michael Toll. He's an attorney at the conservation group Grand Canyon Trust, and his organization has raised an administrative protest to who should have access to that water. In Utah, like other Western states, water rights must be put to what the state calls beneficial use. That's things like agriculture or ranching or mining. An applicant has 50 years to use the water, or the right goes back to the public.
As in Utah and other Western states, water is property of the public. It belongs to the public.
The rule is meant to prevent speculation and hoarding. In 2013, Enefit was about to lose that water right as they waited on BLM approvals for construction of their plant.
What Enefit did was transfer this extraordinarily valuable water right to Deseret Power, which is the owner of the Bonanza coal-fired power plant up in the Uinta Basin, which is maybe 15 or so miles away from where Enefit plans to build its mine and plant.
This was a smart move because there's an exception to that 50-year rule for wholesale electrical cooperatives like Deseret Power. Those companies plan decades into the future, and sometimes 50 years just isn't enough time. So they can apply for an extension, which is what Deseret Power did.
And it did so by swearing that it needed that water to generate electricity to satisfy the public's future power demand.
But that's not what happened. According to administrative documents obtained by Grand Canyon Trust, Deseret Power transferred the water right back to Enefit for $10. Now Enefit once again has the water right and likely enough time to put it to use.
So again, before Deseret Power swore that it needed the water to generate electricity to meet the public's future power demand and got an extension of time from the Division of Water Rights on that basis, it signed a contract with Enefit entitling Enefit to the right to use all of that water for the next 30 plus years to mine and process oil shale.
Toll says he doesn't have a contract between Deseret Power and Enefit, so he doesn't know what the power company got in return for transferring the water right. But it looks like Deseret Power helped Enefit avoid forfeiting access to a huge amount of water. And back to Grand Canyon Trust lawsuit, taking that water could have downstream effects.
Truly disastrous environmental and public health impacts. You know, in the midst of an unprecedented drought and in the country's second driest state, the deal between Deseret Power and Enefit is depriving Utahns of billions of gallons of water that should be available to the public.
Justin Higginbottom, Rocky Mountain Community Radio.
Time now for Naturally with herbalist Brigitte Mars.
Greetings, welcome to Naturally. This is Brigitte Mars, and we've been doing a series on self-care, going up the chakras, and now we are at our third eye center. You know, that place where people put bindis and all that? Well, what can we do to activate that center? Well, I think that this center corresponds a lot to our development of intuition and psychic abilities, but also intelligence. So let's talk a little bit about brain health. Some of my favorite foods for the brain are blueberries, cauliflower, but also things that are black in color, because in Asian medicine, the health of the brain is governed by the health of the kidneys. So things like black chia, high in omega-3 fatty acids, that's great. Eat more of those. They're great. And then black rice, black beans, dark seaweed. So eating the right foods. I also think that we want to keep learning our whole life. Never stop learning. When I watch movies, I almost always put subtitles on in either French or Spanish, because being able to speak to more people is a real good Jedi skill. You know, in all those stories, the person who speaks the language is usually the one that they don't kill. Well, anyways, I guess I've been reading a lot of novels. But it's also a good reminder about where do we put our consciousness. What are we choosing to read? What are we choosing to watch? Are we filling our minds with things that enhance our ability to be in this world and to be smart and brilliant? I am also a big believer in reading our whole life, but I love to highlight in yellow. Yellow is the color of cerebral stimulus. So when we highlight in yellow, it's a reminder that this is something in this book that I really want to remember. And that way, if one of your loved ones, maybe they're not going to read the whole book, but if they see what you highlighted in yellow, that's a way that they can grok or get what really was important in that book. It's so easy to feel overwhelmed, but I'm a big believer in having a day tripper, which maybe you call a day planner. But write things down. Don't try to keep it all in you. How many parties and potlucks and events and things you said you were going to do that you missed because you didn't write it down? I always like the saying, if you think it, ink it. So what else can we do? chanting, you know, ohming. I know if you've been living in Colorado, you've probably been in a few ohm circles. But, you know, ohming actually helps to create a vibration in our pineal gland. So one ohm a day, it's like one breath for peace. You take your multivitamin, do one ohm a day. I often say ohm at 420, but it could be 11:11 morning or night. I don't care. Just do something, one breath for peace. Remember, we need smart people on this planet, and we're counting on you to be among them. Thanks for joining me, Brigitte Mars, on Naturally.
That's all the time we have for today's Morning Magazine. I've been your host, Hannah Stewart. Shannon Young has been the producer. Special thanks to Nicole Rubin, Christian Garabay, Chiara Damari, Alexis Kenyon, Luis Licon, Rosanna Longobetter, Justin Hengenbottom, and Brigitte Mars for their contributions to today's program. A reminder that if you'd like to share a comment with KGNU, call us at 303-447-9911. We play the messages back on Tuesday mornings at 8:25 during the Morning Magazine. Stay tuned for the Hightower Lowdown and then a public affair. That's after these news headlines from the BBC.